This is
KUT.
KUT, Austin.
Stop.
This is KUT Weekend for the third weekend of March 2019. Thank you for listening. I'm Nathan Bernier with KUT 90.5, the NPR station in Austin, Texas. Here's what we got for you this week. The origin of Austin as the live music capital of the world. Take two.
I thought maybe we should have something that said music capital of Texas.
How brands transform Austin venues during South by Southwest.
But finding every nook and cranny. I mean, there's like a grassy patch over here to the left, and there is a brand taking it over.
And challenges facing undocumented construction workers in Texas.
When I found out that a worker dies every 2.5 days in this state, I started looking at each of the new buildings as a number.
Those stories and more in this edition of KUT Weekend.
Amy and I are happy to share with you that I'm running to serve you as the next president of the United States of America. This is a defining moment of truth for this country and for every single one of us.
Beto O'Rourke is running for president. Last year, he lost the U.S. Senate race to Republican Ted Cruz by 2.5 percentage points, about 20,000 votes. And now the former congressman from El Paso thinks he can win the Democratic presidential nomination.
The challenges that we face right now, the interconnected crises in our economy, our democracy, and our climate have never been greater. And they will either consume us or they will afford us the greatest opportunity to unleash the genius of the United States of America.
The man whose job O'Rourke wants, President Donald Trump, was asked about the Beto candidacy.
Well, I think he's got a lot of hand movement. I've never seen so much hand movement. I said, is he crazy or is that just the way he acts? So I've never seen hand movement. I watched him a little while this morning doing, I assume it was some kind of a news conference. And I've actually never seen anything quite like it. Study it. I'm sure you'll agree.
Reporters followed up with a question about who's the bigger threat, Beto O'Rourke or Joe Biden.
I just say whoever it is, I'll take him on. Okay? Him or her. Whoever it is, I'll take him or her on.
KUT's Ashley Lopez covered O'Rourke during the campaign for the U.S. Senate seat. Now she's going to report on the presidential campaign for us. Hello, Ashley.
Hey.
What does Beto O'Rourke have in store next for the next few days?
Well, he's in Iowa. He's already there. He started his Iowa swing. He's there through the weekend. So he's going to be doing what a lot of presidential candidates have already started doing, which is holding events and greeting Iowa voters.
Especially since more than half the states in the union have already legalized marijuana in some form or other. They've medicinalized it. They've legalized it for recreational use. We should end the federal prohibition on marijuana. And given the fact...
Are you going to Iowa?
Yeah, I'm there on Saturday.
What kind of fundraising machine does O'Rourke have?
Well, if it looks anything like what his Senate race looked like, it's going to be a massive fundraising machine. I mean, he raised tens of millions of dollars in that race, exceeded expectations across the board, and had a funding base that was actually not even just in Texas. It was national. There were a lot of people from outside Texas donating. So I'm assuming that's going to get bigger. One of his biggest assets is that he's a great fundraiser.
There is already a Democrat from Texas running for president, Julian Castro. How does his candidacy factor into O'Rourke's? How are they going after the same money? Are they going after the same supporters?
You know, I talked to a Democratic strategist who has the belief that O'Rourke and Castro aren't courting the same parts of the state, like San Antonio and El Paso are different. And then maybe like Austin, Dallas, and Houston, those are up for grabs. That's where a lot of the money is. He believes that there's not a ton of overlap. But yeah, I mean, this is a big state with a lot of Democratic money. So there is going to be some overlap. You can tell Castro's already responding to O'Rourke's run. He released a long list of supporters and people who endorsed him here in Texas. So it could be a little contentious because they're from the same state. But, you know, Democrats see that as a good thing. It's a sign that Texas, the Texas Democratic Party, is really strong. It's never happened before that two Texas Democrats ran for president at the same time. So it depends how you look at it. But yeah, it is a factor in this race.
And if either of them could deliver Texas for the Democratic Party, then wouldn't that be an automatic victory, essentially, if a Democrat could claim Texas?
I mean, if the Rust Belt, those swing states, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, all kind of stay together. If they don't lose too many of, if Democrats don't lose too many of them, yeah, it could be a game changer. I mean, this has been the fear for Republicans for a long time, which is that if Texas turns blue, winning a presidential election through the Electoral College will be almost impossible moving forward. However, it's important to know O'Rourke never won that Senate race. So, yes, every year they're getting closer and closer, thanks in a big part to Beto O'Rourke's very ambitious Senate campaign. But that's a big if.
KUT's Ashley Lopez covering the launch of Beto O'Rourke's presidential campaign. Ashley, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Austin's title as live music capital of the world is on full display this week during South by Southwest. But where did that reputation really come from? A few years ago, KUT's Moz Bouchel looked into that question for our AT Explained project, and he produced a story about what he found. But since then, new information has come to light that's thrown his original reporting into question. So Moz decided to get the band back together and correct the record. It starts with an awkward phone call to the original AT Explained question asker, a guy named Austin Brown.
Okay. This is going to be a hard call to make. Hey, Austin. Hey, Austin.
Hey, Moz.
Hey, Austin. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not great, because I have a confession to make to you. I misled you, and this is not something that, you know, any reporter ever wants to admit, but it's about that story, that I did when you asked about, you know, Austin's reputation as the live music capital of the world. Do you remember that?
I do. What happened?
Let's recap. First, I want to start with this quote from the Austin American Statesman. It says, "Skyrocketing land costs, lack of affordable housing, and a lack of communication between music professionals and business leaders are threatening the vitality of live music in Austin." When do you think that article was written?
I feel like it's a trick question. Because it sounds like it could have been written yesterday.
But it wasn't. It was written in 1985. I want you to remember that year, 1985. They were talking about the same stuff back then that they're talking about today. Some things never change. Now, to tackle this crisis in live music, the city formed a commission. Like I said, some things never change. The chair of that commission was a woman named Nancy Coplin, and she says in 1991, she got a call from a musician who said that to recognize the Austin music scene...
I thought maybe we should have something that said Music Capital of Texas.
So Coplin calls then-city council member Max Nofziger.
And I said, well, that's good, I like that, except this is no time to be modest, so how about if we become the live music capital of the universe?
I said... I'm not sure they have music on Mars.
I said, well, let the Martians be damned. You know, they can invade us or vaporize us, whatever they would do. And she said, you probably couldn't get that past your city council colleagues.
So they settled on live music capital of the world. And they put it to a vote at City Hall.
Under items from council, number 46, approve a resolution declaring the city of Austin the live music capital of the world.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Show those approved.
So you remember that, right?
Right. No, yeah, I do remember that.
But I wouldn't be issuing this correction if that was the end of the story, right? After that story ran, I heard from people telling me that I had it wrong. One was a guy named Ronnie Mack. He used to work for a city-owned television station called the Austin Music Network. And he said, back in the late 80s, it needed a new slogan.
I started thinking, television from Austin, television from Texas.
But that just didn't sound right.
Finally, it hit me that I needed an alternative name for Austin. So I finally come up with Live Music Capital.
And he says the world part was kind of a nod to the Armadillo World Headquarters. But he also wasn't the only person claiming the title. It turns out some people even said former Texas Governor Ann Richards made up the slogan.
So who was it?
Hang on, I'm not finished yet. Finally, there was this mysterious email I got. It started like this. Dear KUT, I lived in Austin from 2006 to 2013, and I wrote a Texas dictionary on my website of over 2,000 terms. I've also solved the origin of the Big Apple and the Windy City. If you ask me to help you, I will do it immediately and for free, although I am penniless. Live music capital wasn't coined in 1991. Nonsense. And that email was from this guy.
Yes, my name is Barry Popick, P-O-P-I-K. I currently live in Goshen, New York. I lived in Austin for 6-7 years, and I research words and phrases all across America and around the world, and I try to find the exact source of those quotations and phrases.
Why? Because it's his passion.
Well, it all started with the Big Apple, and I wanted to do it because I figured that people could still be alive and we could ask them questions. Why is New York called the Big Apple? And I said, this is just amazing. And then I figured, well, maybe I could do the Windy City. And then I did the Windy City. And I said, well, maybe I could do the hot dog. And, well, maybe I could figure out where hamburger comes from. Does it come from Texas or not? And then I did that, and then it just became everything.
So he gave me about 20 different names that Austin's gone by in the past. But he told me to discover the true origin of live music capital, I had to find an advertisement in a Billboard magazine from July of 1985. It was harder to find than I thought it would be, but there is an archive on UT campus that has it on microfilm.
July 13th.
I felt like I was in an old detective movie.
Yeah, there it is.
It was a half-page ad with a cartoon showing Austin as the intersection of a national music railroad, shipping out bands all over the country. And if you look way down in the right-hand corner, this little ad, you see it.
It's right there. 1985.
Predating the city council story, predating the work done by Ronnie Mack, and predating the administration of Governor Ann Richards.
Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world.
And below those words was a phone number. So I called it.
Thank you for calling the Austin Chamber of Commerce.
33 years later, and the number still worked. It took a few more steps, but through the Chamber of Commerce, I was put in touch with a man who could answer my question. His name is David Lord. He worked at the Chamber in the mid-1980s, and he says his job was to promote Austin music with the goal of boosting tourism. So in 1985, he took a group from Austin to a music conference in New York.
Or as I lovingly called it later, 7,000 people with orange hair and me. I was the only guy in the blazer.
The ad in the Billboard magazine was promoting that trip. But for the ad, Lord says, they needed a slogan. So one Monday night, Lord and some other chamber staff members went to a bar on 6th Street and started drinking pitchers of margaritas.
What were the margaritas like?
They were wonderful. They were wonderful.
Someone in the group wondered how many places they could go see live music that night.
So I said, well, get the paper. So we got the paper and went through, and we found that we could go to listen to live music at 70 different venues in Austin on a Monday night.
He says it was then and there that they found their slogan, that Austin was the live music capital of the world.
It felt real. When we said that, it was, no, that's right. We are. We'll just be that. And if we're not all of it, then we'll become that.
Lord says he's pretty sure it was him who first strung those words together. And he went on to come up with marketing campaigns for cities around the country. But he says ever since then, he laughs when he sees cities spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on these branding projects. Because here, in Austin, it only cost 2 pitchers of margaritas. So, Austin?
Yeah.
What do I do with this information? I mean, I already talked to a bunch of people who thought they'd come up with the phrase. Now I have to correct my first story. What, do I go back and tell them all they were wrong?
I think you probably should.
Well, that's exactly what I did. I felt kind of like a jerk doing it. First, I brought it to Nancy Copeland.
This little blurb in Billboard magazine calls Austin the live music capital of the world in 1985.
Oh, that's cool.
She said,
It's a winner. I didn't know about this or I would have stolen it.
I called up Max Nofziger. He said,
well, you know, success has many fathers. Failure's an orphan. You know that saying?
And I asked Ronnie Mack, what happened?
Here's what I think happened. I think we didn't have any idea, at least I didn't, and that I came up with that independently.
That's really what they all said. And Barry Popick, the guy obsessed with the origins of things, he says it's actually really common. Sometimes people half hear something, and when it reemerges, they think it's all theirs. Other times, people really just come up with the same idea at around the same time. It's like there's something in the flow of history that just leads them all in the same direction. But maybe my favorite explanation came from Ronnie Mack. After we talked for a while, he said that the story reminded him of something you hear a lot of people say about the 60s and the 70s. If you remember it, well, you weren't really there. Moses Bouchel, KT News.
The University of Texas at Austin is named in a class action lawsuit over the national college admissions scandal. KUT's Andrew Weber has that.
Two Stanford students sued all eight universities embroiled in the federal investigation into a years-long $25 million bribery scheme. That scheme allegedly allowed wealthy clients of a California-based consultant to secure admission for would-be students by doctoring test scores or falsifying athletic credentials. While the two students didn't apply to UT, they are seeking damages on the grounds that the university didn't have fair and unbiased admissions or recruiting processes. They argue other California students who have applied or could have been recruited by UT didn't get a fair shake. Longtime UT men's tennis coach Michael Center was charged Tuesday for allegedly accepting $100,000 to recruit a California student who didn't play tennis. He's since been fired by the university. In a statement today, UT said Center's actions were not in line with its admissions policy. Andrew Weber, KUT News.
Last weekend, we lost an hour of sleep on Saturday night, and now there's a bill in the Texas House that would end the practice of changing the clocks twice a year. But as KUT's Trey Shaw reports, the author wants the bill itself to go unconsidered.
Representative Lyle Larson, Republican of San Antonio, filed the bill to end daylight saving time in Texas. He said similar legislation has been filed 21 times since 1957 and 9 times since 1990. It's never passed because of disagreement over whether to keep the current system, stay on standard time all year, or stay on daylight saving time all year. He said a lot of the disagreement is between people concerned about the safety of school kids waiting for the bus in the dark versus people concerned about losing daylight for recreational activities in the evenings. Larson says there's a difference this session.
It became untenable because you had all of the different interests, both for daylight savings and standard time, and they couldn't make a decision because you had such a split. Kick it to the voters, let the voters make the decision.
A resolution filed last week would let Texas voters make the decision. It will be on the November ballot if the Texas House and Senate agree to put it there. Trey Shaw, KUT News.
With South by Southwest in full swing, parts of downtown Austin look and feel a lot different than usual. KUT's Claire McInerney ventured into downtown to explore one aspect of how the festival transforms the city.
Last year was my first spring living in Austin and my first time experiencing South by Southwest. During the first week of the Interactive Festival, I went downtown to report a story. I got off the bus and was totally disoriented. All of the restaurants and bars I passed every day on my commute weren't there. Instead, I saw a building wrapped in a giant movie poster, social media logos, and a butter company logo replaced signage for restaurants. These companies completely transformed the inside of these spaces with virtual reality and other ways to showcase the company's products. I had never seen anything like this. So this year, I wanted to learn more about how brands take over local businesses here in Austin. I headed back downtown last week, before the festival really got started, to see those transformations happening. I stopped on the corner of San Jacinto and 3rd. I am outside what is normally the Vince Young Steakhouse, but I'm watching, there's ladders and construction workers and piles of cords, and they're setting up this like rainbow wooden structure over the doorway, and I can see the outline that's probably going to be painted in soon. It says the LG Inspiration Gallery. So I'm nobody at the Vince Young Steakhouse, soon to be LG Inspiration Gallery, wanted to talk, so I kept walking to the convention center. That's where I found Amy Wonky. She's the director of global sales and exhibitions for South by Southwest. And she said this practice of taking over a local business started about 10 years ago.
One of the first groups to really catch on and start doing it was actually delegations from other countries. So you'll walk around, especially Rainy Street, and see the German house, the Australia house, the EU house. And
she says pretty soon brands wanted this kind of exposure. And over the last decade, she says she's been blown away at how the practice has taken off. These days, so many brands want to have a presence during the festival that it's not just bars and venues downtown getting taken over.
And now brands are coming in and finding every nook and cranny. I mean, there's like a grassy patch over here to the left, and there is a brand taking it over.
These kinds of takeovers require a lot of work and a lot of planning. Brian Thompson is a lieutenant with the Austin Fire Department, working in the fire marshal's office on special events. He says step one for a company is to submit an application outlining exactly what they want to do in the space.
We review each one of them, and we typically go out and do a preliminary inspection on each one. And during the actual event, when it's going on, we have inspection teams that are out during the evenings and during the day.
This year, 166 of these events are registered with the city. One of those is the Sweat Life House by Lululemon. On Thursday afternoon, the Clive Bar on Rainy Street was busy. There were guys unloading boxes from a truck, someone sawing pieces of wood, lots of miscellaneous hammering. Two men were installing a white arch over the sidewalk leading up to the bar. A silver chain link fence had just been put up, and long sheets of vinyl with photos of models wearing Lululemon clothes covered the fence. Michelle Greathouse, the Lululemon employee in charge of this takeover, says she wants the bar to be unrecognizable.
So Clive Bar is very rustic. As you can see, usually it feels much darker in here. So what we did yesterday, you see all the walls are white now. So we actually cover those. They're dark, so you can see the color behind the bar.
This is the first year Lululemon has done one of these takeovers at South By. Greathouse says rather than display the clothes and products the company is known for, they wanted to create a space for mindfulness at the festival.
We know at South By Southwest there's so much going on, so much chaos and output and content, and we really want to give people a space to just be and reconnect with who they are so they can go back out refreshed.
Greathouse leads me out to a large inflatable white dome sitting in the yard of Clive Bar. She opens the flaps to the dome, like on a camping tent. The sunlight disrupts the pitch black interior. A few people are sitting on the floor of what they call the frequency dome. They start playing graphics and sounds from an iPad.
Bring fists one at a time back and over the head, like a little mini backstroke, but with elbows bent.
While the sound plays, colorful graphics play across the roof of the dome, like a planetarium. This goes on for about 25 minutes. Lululemon hired a team of artists to create this dome experience. Vivian Rosenthal led the project.
And we wanted to create a space where people could come together and feel each other and feel themselves and feel their true nature, and in a way that also felt full of wonder and awe and magic.
Which seems like a very ambitious goal for the backyard of a bar on Rainy Street during South by Southwest, but more power to them. This huge undertaking comes after months of work. Greathouse visited Austin multiple times and considered many venues before negotiating with Clive Bar to use the space. They hired a production company, an audiovisual company, movers, builders, and the artists who created the dome. Over the course of the weekend, they hosted a dinner, had live music, and led festival goers through guided meditations. But 4 days after the setup, as you listen to this story, it's already gone. Showtime has taken over, making it an experience about their TV shows, or something. Claire McInerney, KUT News.
The Saxon Pub, an Austin music venue that has become a fixture for singer-songwriters and their fans, is the subject of a documentary that screened at the South by Southwest Film Festival. Like a lot of other music venues in town, the Saxon Pub was endangered by higher costs and a crush of development around it. As KUT's Jimmy Moss reports, just before it was too late for either, the fates of the club and the film took a turn.
For most of three decades, the Saxon Pub has been an outpost in Austin's live music scene.
My name is Joe Abels. I own the Saxon Pub. We were just out here on an island in 90. There was a broken spoke, and then there was a horseshoe. And it was pretty dead, mostly used car lots, you know, and some old dilapidated apartments next to us. And, you know, there was nothing here. Across the street was a car wash.
But over the last 15 years, South Lamar has filled in. There are more apartments, restaurants, and businesses. Most of those car lots are gone. The Saxon looked like it would be headed out too. The biggest factor is a familiar one.
Property values are so high, and we're all paying triple net if we're renting. And when you're paying that property tax, that's a killer to overcome. And then you're paying other taxes. Mainly rent has killed the venues, the rent factor, no doubt.
The real estate around the Saxon was being gobbled up, and the dirt underneath Abel's bar was worth much more than the building.
The Saxon Pub, which is a place I love to go and watch music, was going to be relocating, moving.
That's Jeff Sandman. He is the director of the new film, Nothing Stays the Same, the story of the Saxon Pub.
This was back in 2015, and originally I got involved because I just wanted to document the club before it was gone and just get some good live performances, interviews, and preserve that history.
The Saxon Pub is the kind of place that's small enough for acts to get their start and big enough for longtime Austin favorites to mix it up with world-renowned musicians, all within a cozy reach of the crowd. This is Austin-based singer Malford Milligan from the film.
And here I am walking on stage to sing Too Many Memories with Bonnie Raitt. And that's the first time I've been nervous in a long time because I'm singing with Bonnie Raitt, you know. But it was so much fun. It was, it's one of the nights I'll definitely take to my grave.
Once I got started on this film and I'd gotten familiar with the patrons of the Saxon Pub and the bartenders and the owner and then eventually the musicians, you heard their struggles.
Lisa K. Fonenstil is a producer on the film.
And, you know, they're pouring their heart and soul out into jobs that we as a community should appreciate more. And it became more and more evident that we needed to really pay tribute to the Saxon Pub and the musicians and everybody who made that pub great before it went away or before it moved.
But making art takes money. So to get the film moving forward, the filmmakers turned to the artists who frequented the Saxon Pub stage to complete the virtuous circle of funding a film about the funding of a music venue that helps fund musicians who help fund a film.
Hey guys, Robin Shane here. I want to take a second to tell you about a Kickstarter that's going on right now. The Saxon Pub, they are making a documentary about this place. Guys, this is one of the most iconic places right here in Austin, Texas for live music.
The first time film collaborators brought in another producer, Jeffrey Brown, who helped bring other local documentaries to the screen. A film project planned for months turned into years. Totally normal for documentaries, but sometimes delays turn into a gift for the story. By the end of 2016, the Saxon Pub had a new champion in Gary Keller. He is the chairman and CEO of Keller Williams, the international real estate company based in Austin. Keller gives through the All ATX Foundation. The organization benefits the Health Alliance for Austin Musicians, or HAM, the Sims Foundation, Austin Music Foundation, and Black Fret. He's also a big fan of the Saxon.
Purchased the building, said, "You stay there, I'll buy it." I said, "Yes, of course." So we're good. And he deed restricted it. It will only be a music venue forever. So, you know, that down the road is still going to be here. So that's one thing he's doing. He's trying to do it. Trying to help as many as he can.
The completion of another circle. A real estate executive saves a music venue nearly squeezed out by high real estate prices that, broadly speaking, help fuel the wealth of a real estate executive. For Joe Abels, the timing could not have been better. For the storytellers, it was also a dream. Producer Fonenstil says, "There are little things we all can do to keep live music going in Austin."
we need to step up. We need to go to live music. We need to tip the band. We need to tip the sound guy. We need to tip the bartender so that they can have a livelihood in a community that is getting more and more expensive to live in and to thrive in.
There could be more help for music venues in the near future, this time from the city of Austin. Last week, the city announced its $750,000 Creative Space Grant program can be used by for-profit venues. The grants can be used to supplement rent and other improvements, and it may keep other Austin favorites around for a little bit longer.
Take me to the Saxon Pub on South Lamont Boulevard, where they take the blues.
Jimmy Moss, KUT News.
The spring home buying season may be starting early this year. People bought more homes in the Austin area last month than any other February on record, according to the Austin Board of Realtors. Sales were up 6% to more than 2,100 homes. At the same time, the median sales price fell by a third of 1% to $295,000. That's the five-county area around Austin. Austin Board of Realtors President Kevin Scanlon says demand remains strong, but he says this is no longer a market where homes sell significantly above listing price. In San Marcos, the median value for a home has almost doubled in the last 2 decades. KUT's Delia Jones tells us about the city's efforts to address housing challenges in that area.
The strategy to address housing shortages in a growing city such as San Marcos starts with studying it. Researchers found a shortage of almost 6,000 affordable homes for residents earning less than $25,000 a year. Almost one out of five renters say they were displaced in recent years, mainly because of higher rents. Researchers also say San Marcos has a shortage of starter homes priced near or below $200,000. The draft study includes recommendations like increased funding for down payment assistance and using publicly owned lands for affordable housing development. The task force of 19 city leaders will present a final housing plan to San Marcos City Council in the fall. Delia Jones, KUT News.
It's always stressful when someone you love dies. It's one of the hardest things anyone could have to go through. But undocumented immigrants living in the United States face unique types of stress when it happens to them. KUT's Sangeeta Menon reports on new research from Rice University.
The researchers took a close look at undocumented Mexican immigrants living close to the U.S.-Mexico border. Over 85% of them had a loved one die in another country. But because of their immigration status, they couldn't travel to be near those family members or friends. So they end up feeling guilty and are more susceptible to psychological issues, like anxiety and depression. Luz Garcini at Rice University led the research. She says people feel shame for not being with family.
Particularly among Latino immigrants, being around the family, being there for the family in terms of need is very important. So when they're not able to do it, there is a lot of damage to the person's self-esteem.
Garcini says in the absence of access to other professional services, community faith-based organizations provide a sense of comfort in times of loss. Sangeeta Menon, KUT News.
We often hear about how Texas is the best country for business in the United States, and there's data to back that up. I mean, Texas is home to some of the fastest growing cities in the country. But a new documentary debuting this week at South by Southwest asks us to look at the human cost of that growth. In her film, Building the American Dream, Austin-based filmmaker Chelsea Hernandez gives the viewer a look into how undocumented workers in Texas can be exploited. Even though these workers fill roughly half of all construction jobs in Texas, they're often victims of unfair working conditions, unsafe working conditions. KUT's Nadia Hamdan spoke with Hernandez about her film, and they begin with a young construction worker named Roendi Granillo.
So Randy was working on a construction site, building of a home just outside of Dallas in Melissa, Texas, and it was in the hundreds. He was feeling dizzy in the morning, and he continued to work, and he asked his boss for a rest break later in the day, and his boss denied him a break. And around 4 p.m. in the afternoon, his coworkers found him lying in the house that they were constructing, and they ended up going across the street, knocking on the door and telling someone to call 911. By the time he got to the hospital, all his organs were failing and there was really nothing they could do. His body temperature had reached 110 degrees.
And after Randy's death, his parents and his younger sister became advocates of sorts.
Talk to us a little bit about what happened at the Dallas City Council.
So the Workers Defense Project had been trying to get a rest break ordinance passed in the city of Dallas a year prior to Rondi's death, and it was not going through because the Dallas City Council hadn't pushed it forward. And then a new city council had come in, and then the death of Rondi had happened. So we're not sure if maybe having a rest break ordinance prior to his death may have saved him, but it did take Rondi's death to elevate the issue and the need for a rest break ordinance. But there were other members of the council who did not want this rest break ordinance to be passed, thinking that it would hinder businesses from building and moving to Dallas. So there was some pushback from the Dallas City Council, and luckily there were enough people on the council to be able to move the rest break law to a vote, and eventually it was passed in 2015.
And to be clear, I mean, they were asking for 10 minutes for every 4 hours worked.
Right. 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. One rest break.
So I want to touch on that because I remember listening to the council members' arguments. And, you know, we've heard this argument before. Texas has 4 of the 5 fastest growing cities in the U.S. And deregulation is often credited as the reason for that growth. So how do you respond to people, you know, who argue we shouldn't be impeding on businesses, they're creating a stronger economy, which then creates more opportunities for workers? How do you respond to that?
I think 10 minutes is not much to ask for. I don't think they're losing millions of dollars by giving a 10-minute rest break to workers. And in fact, you know, we have a shortage of construction workers here in Texas. So I think if the construction industry can give the workers a safe workplace and assure workers that they can arrive home alive every day after working in construction, then I think there would be more people going to construction jobs. But I think a lot of people know that it's a very dangerous job. It's really hardworking. And then if they know that they can't get a rest break, I mean, I don't know anyone who would want to then go work for a company knowing that they can't get a rest break or could be denied one.
What are some of the legal rights undocumented workers have?
So workers are entitled to pay regardless of status. They are entitled to a safe workplace regardless of status as well. So we sort of see that with a couple of our characters, Claudia and Alex in Dallas, who were robbed of their wages, about $11,000. They were not paid for doing the electrical work on a supermarket in Dallas. And they end up going to the Texas Workforce Commission, a governmental agency here in Texas, to file a wage claim against this contractor. And the Workforce Commission investigated it and decided that they had a true case. So there is legal action that workers can take, undocumented workers. It's just all about knowing that they can and giving them the knowledge.
Your documentary seems to be making 2 arguments, at least from my perspective. One is how we as a state treat immigrants, and another is how we treat corporations. I'm curious, as an Austinite, how has making this film changed the way you look at your city and ultimately your state?
I was very sad at times because I love my hometown. I love Austin. But when I found out that a worker dies every 2.5 days in this state, I started looking at each of the new buildings that entered the skyline as a number. And I wondered how many people were injured or died in the building of that skyrise. So it's made me a little disappointed in my city, but I think that's why I needed to make this film as well, so that people in this town and across the state can see the film and hopefully they can get involved somehow and think differently about the immigrant community.
Chelsea Hernandez is the director and producer of the documentary Building the American Dream, which premiered this week during South by Southwest. Chelsea, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
That's KUT Weekend for the third weekend of March 2019. You can subscribe to this podcast at weekend.kut.org and email any questions or comments to weekend@kut.org or just ask me on Twitter. I'm @KUTNathan. Our theme music is by RAC. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Nathan Vernier with KUT 90.5 and KUT.org. And then,